Jenny Castro, and this is Holding It Together, a podcast produced by MCUSA's Office of Women in Leadership and the Mennonite Inc.
We called ourselves the Finn Group, seeing ourselves as swimming together against the current.
I just remember sitting down with her and her just being like, Emily, do you realize how awesome you are and how gifted you are?
Man, our generation, we need to step up. We need to speak on behalf of our community and amplify the voices of the marginalized in our community.
Then this very tall person bent down to my eye level, called me by name, and shook my hand. I wasn't invisible in that sea of adults.
Today on the podcast, we're featuring you. In this last episode of our Women in Leadership series, we've invited some of our listeners to consider one event, experience, or interaction that significantly shaped their leadership and describe how it affected them. If this is your first time listening, make sure you go back and listen to episodes 1-4. We'll start today with Nancy Kaufman. On May 1st, Nancy officially retired as denominational minister for Mennonite Church USA after 39 years in ministry. Here, she gives us a glimpse into her childhood, naming how her experience of being seen, even at 3 years old, has influenced her life and ministry.
I remember as a three-year-old going to Sunday school and sitting on a chair just my size, looking at colorful pictures of Jesus surrounded by children and hearing from my teacher about his love for all children, including me. To this day, I can still see those images in my mind and hear those words, and I smile. The second thing that was significant about my congregational experience at that time was what happened following the worship service when the congregation lined up to greet the pastor. I can remember standing in the line and sandwiched in between my parents and not being able to really see anything in front or back except my parents. I stayed close so I wouldn't get stepped on. When we came up to the pastor, he greeted both of my parents and shook their hands. Then this very tall person bent down to my eye level, called me by name, and shook my hand. I wasn't invisible in that sea of adults. He actually saw me. At the time, I couldn't have articulated all of the meaning behind that experience for me in my home congregation, but I knew that there was a space for me and that I was called by name. It had a profound impact on my faith development and shaped my understanding of the God of love and of the faith community. So years later, when I was called to join the pastoral team to work with youth and young adults, my mind immediately went back to my memory of my very early experience at church. I had had Sunday school teachers and a pastor who had acknowledged my existence and who helped to shape an environment that provided space for me to encounter God. I wanted to give to others what I had experienced. I learned quickly that there were some youth who felt invisible, and I wanted them to know that in the faith community, they weren't invisible. And in God's eyes, they weren't invisible. Since those early years of ministry, I have continued to care about drawing in all people, including those who often find themselves on the margins, and give them a space to encounter God, a space to breathe in the warmth and the love of God for them, and to be what God intended them to be.
Thanks so much, Nancy, for sharing your story. And thanks for sharing your love for people through nearly 40 years of ministry. I'm convinced it's your passion that made you so good at your job. Up next, we've got Janet Stauffer. She's a marriage and family therapist in private practice and a professor in the Graduate School of Marriage and Family Therapy and the THD program at Evangelical Seminary in Mayerstown, Pennsylvania. In her story, Janet describes the life-giving yet terrifying process of choosing daily to show up, bring what you've got. Here's Janet.
One
one thing that has significantly shaped my leadership is my growing capacity to show up by being me. Early in life, I learned the art of pleasing and taking care of others and too often negated my own knowing. So when my name was nominated for youth group president and the adult advisor raised theological questions about a female in that role, I negated myself by aborting the process in order to please and take care of others. Later in grad school, I was part of a city church that affirmed me as I expressed my leadership gifts as a woman. And when my husband and I were leaving to begin jobs in a rural and more conservative community, I remember standing on the street corner with my pastor, who said to me, "I worry about you, that you will end up baking cookies for the MYF. Baking cookies for the MYF is an important gift, but it's not mine." My pastor's voice became a meaningful placeholder, a reminder to me to not yield to the expectations of where my gifts should be, and to step instead into the opportunities that more fully met my gifting, even when it stretched the congregation, that I could be female and lead at the same time. The journey to find me and the courage to live who I am was strengthened when I was invited to join a group of women leaders in a nearby community. Here I found women who knew deep gifts in ministry, but who could not be credentialed by their conference due to their gender. We called ourselves the Fin Group, seeing ourselves as swimming together against the current. I soaked in the gifts of these women who broke barriers, claimed their passion and calling, and challenged institutional traditions that didn't align with how they experienced God's way of being in this world. While support for my gifts deepened and widened, I found I still struggled to find the freedom to live into the vulnerability of my own existence. I felt like I was in the womb and I had come to full term, but I was frightened to leave the comfort and burst forth into the unknown. I didn't want to have to learn to walk, knowing it meant stumbling and falling as part of the path to becoming. I wanted to be perfect first and then be alive. Yet I knew that to stay in the womb, I would shrivel up and die. So the interior work of finding my freedom to lead was so important. To lead from a place of love, at peace with my own brokenness, able to know my voice and claim it, and able to hear the voice of the other and confirm them. I was never alone in this journey. Divine love wooed me and accompanied me, sometimes as comfort and delight, sometimes tearing away everything that I had clung to for identity and value. And along the way, spiritual directors, therapists, and mentors helped me engage my inner community of voices with all of their entanglements and delights, and to live my gifting from deeper freedom and presence. So when invited to a leadership role, I can consider, is it a place where I will choose freedom to bring me, or is it a space where I will need to leave me behind in order to function? It's an important question, and I continue to develop practices in my life that help me to be centered rather than abandon myself, because the choice to lead from an internal center is never a one-time choice. The question always is, will I show up in this moment today being me, or will I hide? I notice the difference when I show up, present to myself and others, over when I simply function. I choose to embrace my life and my leadership gifts, accompanying them with grace and humility, strength, truth, and courage, always knowing they are formed and fulfilled in relationship with others, held in the deep love of God with and for everyone.
Janet's story so eloquently describes the emotional work that so many women engage daily, to show up and offer what we've got. It's really scary, undeniably so. And yet we do it. We do it because we are called. We do it because we've got gifts to offer. We do it because sometimes someone's got to step up. Sue Park Kerr talks about this. She talks about learning to step up, but also knowing when to step aside. Sue is the denominational minister of leadership development for Mennonite Church USA. She's also co-director of Reconciliation, a peace center in Los Angeles that equips leaders in Korean and Asian American communities to serve in ways that promote peace, unity, and justice. Here's Sue.
In 92, when the LA uprising broke out here in Los Angeles, after the Rodney King verdict came out, rather than focusing on the systemic issues of police brutality, of racism, the media really shifted that narrative to being some conflict between African Americans and Korean Americans. And so our community, our small community, kind of came to the limelight. That's when we realized, wow, who's going to tell our story? Who's going to tell the stories of our parents? Do we even have a cohesive narrative within the framework of immigration, of racism? And we really didn't. And I think we were really looking for somebody who could tell our story. And I think as a college student, I was disappointed that people in our community were not able to do that in an articulate way, in a way that was authentic, or that there weren't enough people who were telling different stories, that it was just this one story. And I think that's when I recognized, man, our generation, we need to step up. We need to speak on behalf of our community and amplify the voices of the marginalized in our community. And I think that was when I realized that I need to step up. The other part of learning to step aside, I learned that this fall, a couple of months ago, my husband and our family and our team from Reconciliation took a trip to China and wanted to do a forum with North Korean delegates. And we were disappointed because they couldn't come out. We cannot go into North Korea because of the travel ban imposed by the U.S. government. And so we were like, you know, what do we do? And we still decided to go to China anyway and have a reconciliation forum with the Christian workers around the area. And I think that's when we really saw that, you know, there are a lot of ethnic Koreans who live in China who've been there for generations. And they have access to North Korea freely without any need of a visa or anything. And I realized, goodness, you know, as Americans, we become very ethnocentric. And I think even immigrants, we kind of feel like we should be the ones who are doing things. We should be the ones who are movers and shakers, and recognize God is preparing these Korean Chinese to do the work in North Korea. And instead of ourselves as Korean Americans trying to play that mediator role, maybe for this generation, we need to step aside and allow other groups to lead and to engage and to lead us with the information that we need, with the relationships that we need to creatively hone outside of the peninsula. And so that was really a humbling and a very exciting point for me to know, you know what, maybe it's not my role to speak up with the issues that pertain to the conflict in the Korean Peninsula, that I need to step aside and I need to encourage and affirm and give resources or provide resources if they're helpful to our brothers and sisters who are leading there.
I really appreciate Sue's stories because I think knowing which is appropriate to step up or to step aside can be really difficult to determine. It takes wisdom to know that simply observing a need does not necessarily determine your call. It requires an incredible amount of intentionality to discern what it is that you're called to do in response to a need. It might be nothing at all. It might be the case that, like Sue, you recognize that there are plenty of others who are capable of responding to the need. Or perhaps you're called in a different way, to mentorship. Emily Kaufman just graduated from Goshen College in Elkhart, Indiana, with a degree in interdisciplinary studies. Her response to our prompt highlights the power of mentorship in her life.
The reasons why I am the woman that I am today directly points to the mentors that I've had throughout my life. From the very beginning, I was invited at an early age to be involved in worship services. And, you know, throughout the course of my life, continued to be invited to be in front of the church and to use my gifts. And it was the women that came up to me afterwards and expressed their affirmation and their words of encouragement, but not only after I would share those gifts in a public place, but, you know, I just think of one woman in particular while I was at Heston College. I got there freshman year and, you know, wasn't really sure what exactly I wanted to get involved in. But my admissions counselor invited me to apply for this position in the marketing and communications department. And so I said, oh, why not? So I went and had an interview. And little did I know, the woman sitting behind the interviewer chair would become one of my greatest mentors, Marithana Prothrow. And I ended up getting that position and really would name that opportunity as being kind of the beginning of so many opportunities that I've had just in the last 3 years, specifically with writing and becoming more involved in the writing scene within the Mennonite Church. And I'll always remember the one conversation that I had with Marithana. I just remember sitting down with her and don't remember the exact words, but her just being like, Emily, do you realize how awesome you are and how gifted you are? I need you to believe that, and I need you to claim it for yourself. I remember just sitting there and being like, okay, like it's one thing to hear all of these words of affirmation, but it's another to believe them. And so from that point on, I really tried to not just let all of these words of affirmation go in one ear and go out the other, but to really use them to continue to challenge myself and push myself to do things that I don't think I can do. And that's led me to some really, really incredible places and continued to help me to meet incredible women who have really empowered me. I really look forward to the day when I can be that woman mentor to someone my age down the road, because I know how beautiful and how powerful all of my mentors have been and continue to be for me.
Mentors can really open up possibilities. Like in Emily's case, we can even begin to see ourselves differently through the eyes of our mentors. Our last story today comes from Shirley Hershey Showalter. She is the author of Blush, A Mennonite Girl Meets a Glittering World. Shirley was the first woman president of Goshen College in Indiana, serving 1996 to 2004.
In 1981, when I was asked by president of Goshen College at that time, J. Lawrence Burkholder, to attend a conference on women in leadership in higher education, I was honored to be asked by someone I admired so much as Lawrence Burkholder, and I was intrigued by the idea that I might consider leadership at some level in higher education. I was very junior at that time. I was an assistant professor, part-time, working also as the director of continuing education at Goshen College. So I hadn't been giving a lot of thought to becoming college president, but the combination of someone I respected, an institution in Washington, D.C., which took responsibility for changing higher education by inviting women to consider leadership, knowing that tapping people on the shoulder is one of the very best ways to ignite the passion and the energy of leadership in another person. I was given a mentor at that meeting, and the idea of mentoring became very important to me. I was about to go to Haiti that particular session, and as a matter of fact, I went from the meetings directly to Port-au-Prince, where I joined the Goshen College SST program, the study service term, and my husband and family. And so it was a conjunction of the most important program that Goshen College had, which was taking students into foreign countries, exposing them to a significantly different culture, and asking them to serve as they learned. It was an eye-opening experience for me on top of another eye-opening experience. And so when I returned to campus, I returned with an imagination that had been charged by both the external calling of or the planting of a seed for leadership at a later point, and the most immediate experience of really believing in the value of Goshen College and of the mission of the institution. The combination of rededicating myself to my own place and being open and willing to consider leadership at a higher level somewhere in the future was a very powerful one. And of course, it didn't happen right away. I was asked to consider deanships and provostships, but the time was never right for my family or for my own responsibilities outside the classroom. So I wasn't at all sure I would ever become a college president. But in 1995, 96, I got a phone call and I was asked to consider something that I had not considered before 1981. But after 1981, I at least could imagine the possibility of it.
I am again and again and again astounded at the strength, tenacity, determination, and courage of the generations of women who have blazed the trail before me. These women open up possibilities for all of us to imagine ourselves in all kinds of positions of leadership. Thanks so much, Shirley, for telling your story. And with that, we've come to the end of our series on women in leadership. I hope the stories and ideas we've shared throughout this series inspire you. I hope they free you and empower you. I hope you've seen snippets of yourself in these stories. Know that you aren't alone in the struggles you encounter. We're here, bearing witness to your journey of becoming. We're noticing the beauty of the process. We're celebrating with you in those moments that you shine. And we're also here in the day-to-day struggle because we're all holding it together. I want to thank Nancy, Janet, Sue, Emily, and Shirley for participating in our first ever Talkback episode and sharing their stories. Go to the Holding It Together webpage on Fireside for full bios of each of these remarkable women. If you would like to participate in one of our upcoming Talkback episodes, send me an email at jennifer.c@mennoniteusa.org and I'll send you a prompt. This episode was produced by me, Jenny Castro, with editing help from Shay Langley. Our theme music was written and recorded by the very talented Addie Lichty. To find more music by Addie, look for Addie and the Subtracts on Facebook or Addie Lichty on YouTube. Holding It Together is a joint production of Mennonite Church USA's Office of Women in Leadership and the Mennonite Inc. Look for us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Fireside, or wherever you prefer. If you feel compelled, I'd invite you to rate and review us and tell your friends about us. I'm your host, Jenny Castro. Thanks for listening, y'all. Talk soon. Some might say